This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, my name is Ethan Deep, and I'm currently a fourth-year student here at the University of Cincinnati. Today, I'm going to be continuing to read this month's issue of the magazine Men's Health. The program is run by Brock Yost, pictured in the top right of this magazine, the 42-year-old owner of the local CrossFit box form, who is teaching the students how to practice proper form, set achievable goals, and make progress safely. He'll also swap in nutrition seminars for practice several times a season. The teachings reinforce the importance of exercise and balanced nutrition and act on the recent evidence that weightlifting is good for teens. It helps improve their bone density, muscular development, cardiovascular health as well. Yost knows pushing yourself to your physical limit is also about betterment of the mind. Whether you want to admit it out loud or not, it gives you something in here, he says, pounding his chest. He's seen the way exercise has sparked joy in certain students who lack positive influences at home or in other parts of their lives. The culture of teamwork gives many of them a place to belong in a phase of life when belonging is so critical. Sportless kids are lined up right next to the band kids, who are lined up right next to the track stars. The borders of socioeconomics, race, and cliques are blurred in the weight room, because at the end of the day, none of those things give you an advantage in deadlifting a barbell. It's a safe space in the clannishness of high school. If a student wants to be a part of it, they have to maintain one criterion: support others no matter what. We call it the gas station, Yo says. We're always gassing each other up. The squad. Meet 16's crushing gains at Three Rivers. Tyreek Tompkins, 18 years old, senior. Favorite exercise? Anything legs. Gains? Tyreek loves taking his body to the max. He says it brings him peace and clarity. For 1 hour after school, four times a week, he gets to change and chances to space out life because I've been going through hard times. His favorite thing about the program, though, his teammates, is we've seen what we can help each other grow. He loves the teammate aspect. Tip: Tyreek knows that squats and deadlifts are about the whole body, not just the legs. He focuses on maintaining tension through his shoulder blades to keep a flat back during these Olympic lifts. Mia Cesar, 15 years old, sophomore. Gains: at the last rack in the row, a barbell is loaded up with nearly 200 pounds. Along comes Mia, who effortlessly flows through her squats. She's been in the program for only a year and has already qualified for the state championship. Goal: place in the top three at state championships. Tip: I used to not to be able to do push-ups. Now I can do 32. The way she got there? She learned how to do negative push-ups. Start in a high plank position and lower your body to the floor as slowly as you can, and practice them every day. Lucas Salinas, 17 years old, senior. Goal: place in the top three overall in state competition. Gains: team leader Lucas was only 13 years old when he began weightlifting. He's self-taught. He took it up just to stay in shape and now is one of the program's top performers. He can deadlift 500 pounds. Tip: don't compare yourself to others. Stay positive about yourself and your accomplishments. Ben Bryant, 17 years old, junior. Ben Bryant McDaniels has a goal of hitting a 500-pound deadlift by the end of his senior season. Gains: at practice, you can catch Ben making his teammates laugh and offering congratulatory slaps on the back when deserved. He works hard, too. He did a 350-pound squat at the end of his first season in the program. For Ben, though, the powerlifting program provides him an escape from the realities of life, emotionally and mentally. Tip: Ben built up strength of his squat so quickly by focusing on engaging the hips and engaging his core. Emma Jo Martin, 14 years old, freshman. Favorite exercise? Back squat. Gains: Even at 14 years old, Emma Jo is no beginner with the barbell. She's been lifting since she was 11 years old. Through it all, she's gained confidence and knows that lifting isn't just for people who are super fit. Balance is important, Emma Jo says, even the gym. She's valuing rest more, learning to know when my body needs a break, and was a huge milestone. Lonnie Holderman, 17 years old, senior. Anthem, Crush a Lot by Lil Baby. Gaines, even though the echoing teen voices counting together during practice warm-up, you can hear Lonnie's voice rise above the rest. He's one of the program's team leaders and is hoping to win a state title in powerlifting. He back squats 455 pounds, chest presses, or bench presses, 315 pounds, and deadlifts just north of 500. The lesson that's helped him put on muscle is eat more protein, he says. He loads up on meat when possible, preferably heavily seasoned chicken and a steak. The key to Lonnie's strong deadlifts? Harnessing all his energy in the pull by being angry at the bar, he says. It's a war every time you deadlift. Dr. Atiyah's longevity tips for your teens. Body. You're near your physiological prime in terms of your body's capacity to train. This is a decade to prioritize training. Lean into your volume and work out as much as possible to build a reservoir of muscle and fitness. Mind. There's often a disconnect between mistakes you make, which probably are minor, and the way you talk about yourself and talk to yourself about them, which can be brutal. One of the most powerful exercises I learned was to listen to myself talk. I'd record voice memories to myself on my phone, pretending I was speaking to a dear friend on my phone after I did anything that could produce self-judgment. Over my time, self-critical voice became fainter and fainter. Dispatches from the fast track. Quarter life crisis? Never heard of it. Six guys who accomplished some amazing hashtag life goals before turning 30 years old open up about how they did it, where they go from here, and what the rest of us can learn from them. Jamal Hill, 2019, 29 years old, Paralympic medalist and founder of the Swim Up Hill Foundation. At 6 years old, Jamal Hill joined his first swim team. At 10, he was diagnosed with a hereditary neurological disease called Charcot-Marie-Tooth that took him out of the pool and into a hospital bed, mostly paralyzed from the neck down. Through physical therapy, he regained some movement, though he retained only about 30% of his nerve capacity from his elbows to his fingertips. This meant he had to relearn how to walk, hold a pencil, and eventually swim. A little over a decade later, Hill would become a professional swimmer. In 2019, he joined a Pan American team and won his first international medal at 24 years old. In 2021, he made the U.S. Paralympic swimming team, was signed by Speedo, and won a bronze medal. Once his dream of becoming a professional swimmer was realized, Hill made a pledge to be more than an athlete, which led him to create the Swim Up Hill Foundation, an organization that provides swim instruction to people of color throughout the world, many of whom don't know how to swim. Hill refers to the foundation as his most valuable asset and most significant accomplishment to date. I don't call the Swim Up Hill Foundation a not-for-profit. I call it a for-purpose business. The key things that got that made our foundation successful is number one being me. I got a crazy work ethic. I'm extremely ambitious. I've always been a hustler. You gotta have that committedness, that I don't want to quit factor. You gotta be very clear on your why, because it's not worth it until it's worth it. Most people nowadays fantasize about working for themselves, but don't have anything that truly sets them apart. Being a gold medalist alone is not going to set you apart. Number two, you need to have a minimal viable product, or MVP, that adds something different to the marketplace. It's got to be truly special. Number three is your strategy. Businesses must earn a profit to be viable. What's going to set you apart is your ability to generate your own revenue, and things like that take time. If you do receive money for your organization, whatever you do, do not spend the money that you get on things that you are already doing for free. That's the biggest mistake. Somebody gets a grant for $10,000 and they were visiting schools. They then spend $10,000 to go and visit more schools. No, you're already doing that. This is the money you need to be investing in your organization to create a structure and viable product that will ultimately generate revenue and allow you to have self-sustaining ability so that your mission can grow over time. Number four, the biggest thing is always going to be mentors. I've had mentors this whole way, for better or for worse. Number five, you're going to have a big fucking goal. With the Swim Uphill Foundation, what drives our mission and what I sell people with is we're going to be teaching 1 million people how to swim every single year. I promise you that drowning will come to an end. But for myself, that million is not big enough. I want a Nobel Peace Prize from work even beyond the Swim Uphill Foundation. Hopefully one day this is so big nobody knows who the fuck I am, but I'll have such a breadth and wealth of work that the world has benefited multiple times over. Danny Michael and Philippou, 31 directors of Talk to Me, 2023. Danny and Michael Philippou launched their YouTube channel, Raka Raka, in 2013 as a place to publish vlogs, horror comedy, shorts, and fake fail videos, but the Australian twin brothers never wanted to be YouTubers. They wanted to be filmmakers. Enter Talk to Me, a 2023 supernatural horror movie about a group of teenagers who play around with embalmed severed hand to talk to spirits. It received rave reviews, grossing $92 million globally and becoming a distributor, A24's second highest earning film, with a sequel already in development. The YouTube stars turned filmmakers share the method behind their movie making success. The decade we created YouTube videos helped us grow as filmmakers. Every video we did, we treated as a testing ground. We practiced different elements, whether creating our own visual effects, building a set, or doing makeup. That separated us from most debut feature filmmakers. We wrote Talk to Me while still making YouTube videos. In 2018, we moved out of Los Angeles to try and sell the script. We were shopping it around everywhere, not getting any bites. We were aware there were doubts that YouTubers could direct a feature film, but the way we got around it was by making the film first instead of trying to get it sold beforehand. The A24 deal happened because they saw the finished film that we made and independently premiere at Sundance. For anyone trying to get a film picked up for or a film made, the first step is to find a producer that knows the financing steps a bit better than you and can help you develop the script. It didn't really take much convincing for our producer to take us seriously because she saw in our YouTube shorts that we could tap into an audience, there was a narrative behind the videos, and we were demonstrating editing and directing abilities. In regards to the success of the film, it's important to be really personal. Originally, one of the initial studios we spoke to was worried that Australian films don't translate overseas. We found that humanity translates all over the world. Successful filmmaking also requires hiring people and heads of departments that can accomplish things that you never can accomplish on your own. It's about not being too dictatorial, but allowing other voices to come in and help you make your voice louder. A lot of people are trying to wait for the perfect time for them to be ready to make something or create an idea. No. Make the version that you can make now, and then the more you do it, the better you're going to get. Get it out of your head and onto a page. Just start creating. Andy Fang, 31-year-old co-founder and head of consumer engineering at DoorDash. Andy Fang is one of four young people who founded DoorDash in 2013. The online food ordering and delivery platform, which began as a class project in the Startup Garage course at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, has grown into a $40 billion company and expanded into grocery and beauty retailers. Fang, currently the head of consumer engineering, credits three key initial lessons for DoorDash success today? First and foremost, we made a point to focus our business philosophy on being customer obsessed, not competitor focused. Our early success was built on the fact that we did a lot to show our customers that we were committed to addressing their needs, that helped build trust, which helped build our business. The second most important thing we learned was how to thoughtfully run a strong, capital-efficient business. We showed investors business metrics like order frequency, share of new users, and customer retention, which were outperforming projections. When you're doing well in those areas, you can spend less on marketing and invest more in creating better products for the Dashers, merchants, and consumers. Our entry into the Y Combinator, a well-known accelerator program for startups, which we went through the summer after my junior year of college, became our initial major fundraising challenge. The incubator investments we received were around $100,000. A month or so after the Y Incubator, we went through a successful round of Series A funding, the first round of funding after seed capital, the initial amount of money used to start a business. From there, we are finally able to pay ourselves a salary. The third lesson is we learn how to get along as a group. Starting a business with another person always poses challenges, but when you're starting a business with friends and three others, to be exact, it can be even more difficult. We avoided any major conflicts among ourselves because we had clear delineation of roles from the beginning. These roles always came naturally because they played onto our strengths. I was always a developer, building our software platforms and algorithms from the ground up. Stanley had a strong talent for design and product. He designed all the user experiences and our marketing materials, also defining the product vision to build logistics network as our core building block. Tony was always the most business-minded of the three of us, the best at talking to investors, defining the business model, and helping us assign our first merchant partners. Editor's note, Evan Moore, the fourth co-founder, left the company early on before the Series A funding. At this point in my career, one piece of advice that has always stuck with me is to not force anything. If you force yourself to start a company, you can lose the love, the inspiration, and the magic that leads to innovation and creativity. Follow your curiosity. Take what you're good at and find an intersection with something that you enjoy doing. Zach Ritano, 32 years old, CEO and co-founder of Row. At 18 years old, Zach Ritano was diagnosed with a congenital heart condition after his heart rate dropped to zero during a stress test. His father, who's a doctor, helped revive him along with a cardiologist. After a heart procedure, the cardiologist prescribed Ritano as a heart medication, but it had one main side effect, erectile dysfunction. When Ritano experienced heart issues again in his mid-20s and was prescribed the same medication, he feared it would derail his relationship with his then-girlfriend, now-wife. While the situation was less than ideal, it did inspire him to launch Row, formerly known as Roman, in 2017. A telehealth company aimed at treating erectile dysfunction, it has since expanded into hair loss, weight loss, skin care, fertility, and more. As a co-founder and the brand's chief executive officer, Ritano has learned essential lessons while growing Row into a $7 billion juggernaut. While leading Row, I have learned that receptivity to feedback and making yourself open to feedback is important. Feedback is data, and the main person that's harmed by not getting that data is you. Check your ego at the door. This is a muscle I've built over time. It doesn't happen right away. The greatest leadership gift for me is the humbling nature of running a company and seeing how often you're wrong. It makes you far more open to everything in your life. Every perspective, every opinion, every data point. The other big thing for me is sustained work ethic. You do need to work harder than most people to have an impact, but to do that, you must prioritize your physical and mental health. I exercise 3 to 4 times per week. I have an executive coach that provides one-on-one guidance and support to deal with the mental component. I have also benefited tremendously from a successful and supportive and deep relationship with my wife as a partner in life. We have date night every Saturday night where I put away my phone. Having a community or support system, whether it's a partner, friends, or family, is essential to sustaining that work ethic. Speed of execution is a big thing too. If you think about the way that people are taught in school, they're generally graded as an individual on a percentage of what they get right. For example, 95 out of 100 on a test. When you get out into the real world and you become building products, you're not an individual, you're a team. You're also far more judged on the cumulative number of right answers than the percentage. That shift means you need to make decisions quickly with less data and still be right a lot. Learning that and being good at that is very important. In my mind, there's no secret to finding a product, market fit, and scaling up. There are ways to increase your chances, though. You move quickly, you do it without an ego, and you work really hard with integrity. The individuals and the skill sets may evolve over time, but if people keep that at the heart, ultimately, that's what will allow them to grow as an individual and build the best products for their customers over time. Dr. Atiyah's longevity tips for your 20s and 30s. Body. Your endurance peak plateau extends through this time, so train for a marathon or century ride or triathlon and look to push your cardio fitness to super high levels. Mind. Life is happening. Career. Family. Mortgage. So keep your stress tolerance window open as wide as possible. Things that widen it are what you'd expect. Exercise, sleep, time with friends, and other behaviors that support emotional health. Overcommitting compresses that window. Work on learning to use the word no. Representative Maxwell Frost, 27, first Gen Z member of Congress. When Maxwell Frost's friends first asked him to consider running for office in early 2021, it was a, quote, hell no from the then 24-year-old National Organizing Director at March for Our Lives, or MFOL, a youth-led movement to eliminate gun violence. It wasn't until he connected with his biological mother and learned about her life struggles that he finally told himself, I'm going to do this. He submitted his notice to MFOL in July 2021 and announced his candidacy a month later. Running a campaign is tough as hell. Following 10-hour days, raising money, and canvassing, Frost worked as an Uber driver and a backstage production tech at night to pay his bills. His mental health tanked. After making his way from 5% to 34% in the polls, he won the race to represent Florida's 10th district in November 2022 and officially became the first Gen Z member of Congress. The year and a half of campaigning taught him many lessons, including how to connect with his donors and really get people to support his vision. The money is a huge part of the success of a campaign, which is unfortunate. I think it's a detriment to democracy, and we have a lot of work to do there. But I know that to be a voice for changing the system from the inside, I would have to essentially play the game of raising a lot of money. To do that, I needed to build those relationships over the phone and target those calls. The key is to find ways you can really connect with the individual who's on the other side of the line. I always start my conversations by introducing myself and then asking them, what do you care about? What are the issues that are top of mind for you right now? Then it gives you an opportunity to really build rapport. After you build a rapport, it's essentially working to set an environment where the person feels comfortable enough to write you a check at the end of the conversation. I start that part of it preemptively talking about what the money is going to be used for, then I ask them to give an exact amount. Don't just say, hey, can you send a contribution? We look at the donor's giving history and we're able to assess what a good and reasonably aspirational ask would be. I would talk a lot about my age and the significance that played on donor calls, But I was very specific with my staff that I'm not running to be the first Gen Z member of Congress. So I would never bring it up during debate. All my communication was, vote for me because I've been fighting as an organizer and I want to end gun violence and I want to defeat the climate crisis and I want to believe that everyone deserves health care. The other thing is just knowing that it's a campaign and what you're ultimately trying to do is get votes. The best thing you can do to persuade someone to agree with you on a specific topic is listen and validate through their concern. But don't have it in your mind and that at the end of the conversation, the person is going to agree with you. More often than not, they won't. You have to see yourself as a part of a bigger puzzle, not the end-all, be-all in the conversation. Alan Ritchson goes big. Hollywood told him actors don't break past 30, but he kept working, and at 41 years old, after decades of near misses and tiny roles, the Reacher star is busting out. My sense of men's measurement has been badly warped by height inflation on dating apps. Anything above 5'8" is a mystery to me, but I know Alan Ritchson is tall. Tall, tall. I meet the 41-year-old in the basement of a house where he's doing our photo shoot, halfway between Atlanta and his log cabin in Jasper, Georgia. A large plastered overbeam drops down from the basement ceiling and everyone else moves under it easily. When Ritchson approaches the beam, I feel the same bolt of stress as when a particularly large truck is about to pass under a particularly low overpass. His soup of coppery hair barely clears the beam each time. He seems taller than his 6'3" frame. That's 6'8" on Hinge. Perhaps it's because of the size of the rest of him. With even the slightest movement, at least a dozen muscles visibly activate. Or perhaps it's because his identity has been so fused with that of former military police officer Jack Reacher, whom Ritchson plays on Amazon Studios' hit series, Reacher. Season 1 and Season 2 are active. Season 3 is in development. The character is famously enormous. His creator, author Lee Child, dryly explains that Reacher follows a long tradition of male writers making their heroes 1 inch taller than they are. Child is 6'4". Size is so centric to the character that when noted short king Tom Cruise played Reacher in a film adaptation, he was met with skepticism. Child says there was a huge amount of pushback from the book fans and so on saying, no, we need a man mountain here. Ritchson makes everyone, everything around him so dainty. When he's done posing for photos, we adjourn to a den and squeeze into a slightly too small love seat. On his left wrist, he wears a thick Audemars Piguet Royal Oak offshore watch. On his right wrist, 2 silver bracelets, 1 sparkling with gemstones, move fluidly over a tattoo of a lotus flower. Around his neck, he wears a silver chain with 2 rings. So bejeweled, he toes a dangerous sartorial line between rock star pastor and off-duty celebrity, but his face, the cologne ad glower, total symmetry of the strong left chin marks him as the latter. Once again, my name is Ethan Deep, and this has been a reading of Men's Health, the magazine. Thank you.